Hello, this is Linda welcoming you back to part two of the Decatur Herald and Review for today, Tuesday, November 28th, 2017. We're going to begin with the obituaries, and our first obituary is for Leona F. Nichols out of Decatur. Leona F. Nichols, 91, of Decatur, passed away Monday, November 20th, 2017, at her daughter's home in Mesa, Arizona, surrounded by her family. Mass of Christian burial to celebrate Leona's life will be 10 a.m. Friday, December 1st, 2017, in St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic Church, 2160 North Edward Street, Decatur, with the Reverend Richard Welton, celebrant. Visitation will be from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday, November 30th, 2017, in the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, with a vigil prayer service at 5:30 p.m. Burial will be at Calvary Cemetery in Decatur. Memorials are suggested to St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic Church or Banner Health Hospice, 275 East German Road, Suite 110, Gilbert, Arizona, 85297. Banner is spelled B as in boy, A-N-N-E-R, and German is spelled G-E-R-M-A-N-N. Next we have Gail Lynn James out of Decatur. Gail Lynn James, 79, of Decatur, passed away Friday, November 24, 2017, at Park Point Healthcare and Rehabilitation in Morris, Illinois, surrounded by her family. Funeral services to celebrate the life of Gail James will be at 1 p.m. Thursday, November 30, 2017, at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday before the service. Burial will be in Boiling Springs Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the Cancer Care Center Specialists of Illinois, American Cancer Society, or St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Next, we have Donna Weston out of Mount Pulaski. Donna Weston, 81, of Mount Pulaski, passed away at 3:44 p.m. Sunday, November 26, 2017, at Manor Court in Clinton. Services for Donna will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, December 2nd, 2017, at the First United Methodist Church in Latham, with the Reverend Mark Morgan and Reverend Ziola Marty officiating. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to services from 9 to 10 a.m. Memorials may be made in Donna's name to the Latham Fire and Rescue. Private graveside services will be held at Lake Bank Cemetery at a later date. Next, we have Jeffrey Allen Kruger out of Decatur. Jeffrey Allen Kruger, 63, of Decatur, died peacefully on November 22, 2017, at the University of Wisconsin Hospital, Madison, surrounded by his loving family. A service to celebrate and honor Jeff's life will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, December 2nd, 2017, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, December 1st, 2017, at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest at Macon County Memorial Park, and memorials can be made to the Rock Springs Nature Center, Macon County Conservation District. Next, we have Bonnie Jean Davis out of Decatur. Bonnie Jean Davis, 90, of Decatur, Illinois, formerly of Arcola, Illinois, passed away at 7 a.m. on Thursday, November 23, 2017, at Imboden Creek Living Center in Decatur, Illinois. Memorial service will be held at 12 p.m. noon on Wednesday, November 29, 2017, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street, Arcola, Illinois. Burial will follow in the Arcola Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to the Humane Society of Decatur and Macon County, to the animal shelter of your choice, or to the Alzheimer's Association. Next, we have Gertrude Evelyn Clark of Kinney. Gertrude Evelyn Clark, 92, of Kinney, Illinois, passed away at 1:05 a.m. November 24th at Symphony of Decatur, Decatur, Illinois. Per Gertie's wishes, there will be no services. The family entrusted Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, Illinois, with cremation rites. Memorials may be directed to Symphony of Decatur. Next, we have Richard Joseph Dick Murrell, M-U-R-R-E-L-L, out of Decatur. Richard Joseph Dick Murrell, 81, of Decatur, left to be with Jesus November 24, 2017. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Christ United Methodist Church. Services to celebrate Dick's life will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, November 30th, 2017, at Christ United Methodist Church in Decatur. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 29th, 2017, also at the church. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of the arrangements. That does conclude the obituaries for today. Next, we'll be moving into the dialogue section, and we're going to begin with letters to the editor. The first one is submitted by Susan Avery and Jill Davis out of Decatur. It's titled America in Bloom, Judges Coming to Town. The judges are coming. In June, the Decatur community will be evaluated for an America in Bloom National Recognition Award. They will be looking at our lakeside development, our historic properties, neighborhood revitalization, and our blooms, among others. How can we get ready for them? The weather might be frightful, but we can always be mindful of picking up litter on and around our properties. Have you considered adopting a street? You and your family, group, organization, or workplace can contact Beautify Decatur Coalition at facebook.com/Beautify Decatur Coalition. There are still several corridors in need of some tender loving care. And by the way, keep your eyes open this holiday season for beautifully decorated businesses. Go to facebook.com/Beautify Decatur Coalition to nominate your favorite to win the Let's Keep Decatur Merry Business Holiday Award. It's easy. Just tell us the business that you think is the most beautifully decorated for the season. That concludes that letter to the editor, and again was submitted by Susan Avery and Jill Davis out of Decatur. Next, reading from Our View. It is titled Net Neutrality Just Fine as It Stands Now. This is submitted by the Herald and Review editorial board. No one has given a good reason to oppose net neutrality, but for some reason, there's an ongoing effort to oppose it. Maybe the reason is obvious. Take a look at the internet service providers who oppose net neutrality: Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T. The key point in support of net neutrality is keeping the lines open. One of the greatest things about the web, and as we've learned recently, one of its danger areas, is all information is created equal. Internet service providers are required by law to allow equal access to all areas on the web. Not that the Comcasts and Verizons of the world haven't tried to limit access and throttle bandwidth in their favor. Services have been caught repeatedly slowing certain sites. Streaming services like Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Video are direct competitors to cable television companies, who also provide internet access. So if Comcast were to slow down any streams from Netflix, so your image buffers to the point of thinking, I might as well pay for cable, then that's a victory for Comcast, a victory they've earned by messing with the rules. But net neutrality isn't simply about making it easier for us to stream Stranger Things. Amy Nordrum on website IEEE.org puts it bluntly when she writes, "Net neutrality is a regrettably bland term for an important idea. ISPs such as Verizon and Comcast ought to deliver all online content to consumers in the same way, without granting preferential treatment to any particular content." One of the likely outcomes from the elimination of net neutrality would be a pay-to-play system. Well-moneyed companies with the capability to pay for their content to be delivered would come at an expense. High speed for high dollars. Opponents of net neutrality favor arguments that prices will drop for consumers and innovation will be sparked. There's little evidence that this predicted outcome is likely or probable. Do you really want to trust Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T to do the right thing by their customers? Is there anything in the track record of either company to suggest that's a good idea? One of the problems whenever net neutrality comes up is the buzzwords and catchphrases are easy to manufacture. Shouldn't there be some oversight of the internet? Yes, there already is. If someone has the money to buy bandwidth, isn't it a violation of freedom of speech to prevent them from doing so? No, there is no such violation in these cases. The entity with the most money isn't entitled to win every time. That's not the system we've agreed on when it comes to this discussion. When this issue was last debated in 2014, the FCC solicited public comments on the issue. They received a record 3.7 million comments, with the vast majority in favor of net neutrality. To those opposed to net neutrality, we ask one question. Why are you willing to allow a Comcast, Verizon, or AT&T be the ultimate arbiter on what you read and see on the internet? And that concludes that article. Continuing in the dialogue section, our next article is submitted by Jonathan Bernstein. Jonathan Bernstein is a Bloomberg View columnist. His article today is titled, "The Political Turkeys of 2017. It's been a tough year for those of us who call ourselves political junkies. That's not to say, however, that we haven't had our share of fun or that we have nothing to be appreciative of. One pledge. In composing this item, I had no contact with former Russian Ambassador Kislyak. Never met him. He's certainly not in the room right now as I type this. Yet. Here's the list of what political junkies can be thankful for in the last 12 months. 1. Special elections. The chance to play jaded hipster for all true political junkies. First, we can be the only kid in the class who knows about, say, the epic GA6 battle between Karen Handel and John Ossoff. Then we can dismiss them as less important than everyone thinks. Even better, while y'all are focused on House specials, we can dig deep into the state legislative versions. I still do think by-election is a better name for them, though. Next, wacky candidates, such as the probably married couple running against each other for the Montana U.S. Senate seat up next year. Even if they're not the all-time wackiest Montana candidates, Next is C-SPAN, especially when it picks up local news feeds from foreign elections. Love it. Also love when it sticks with an event after the speeches are over, so we can soak in the handshakes and the ambient noise. The very best C-SPAN. I'll say it again. Brian Lamb is a hero of the Republic. Next is side players in political scandals. Big scandals invariably provide us with third-tier players who are, well, a hoot and a half. The leading Trump/Russian character so far, Carter Page. And next is cronies, hangers-on, and generally unqualified and incompetent people. The administration is filled with them, and it is undeniably terrible for the nation. For political junkies, though, there's plenty to enjoy. I'll nominate Sebastian Gorka's dissertation for the prize among this group. The Senate class of 2012. I still think the senators up for re-election for the first time this year were an unusually promising group, and they've collectively had a pretty good first term. We'll miss Jeff Flake, who will leave Ted Cruz and Deb Fischer as the only Republicans. Some of the Democrats are at risk, but collectively Chris Murphy, Mazie Hirono, Joe Donnelly, Angus King, Elizabeth Warren, Martin Heinrich, Heidi Heitkamp, Tim Kaine, and Tammy Baldwin remain a formidable group. Together, there's very little dead wood among these 12 senators. Election day and election night information. I'll highlight in particular the fine work by Daily Kos Elections and by Decision Desk HQ. Next is Dan Dresner's epic Twitter thread about White House staff talking about the president as if he was a toddler. Also, Chuck Grassley's Twitter feed and Claire McCaskill's Twitter feed. And that thing where there's always a perfect old Donald Trump tweet to undermine whatever the new Donald Trump tweet says. And last, ridiculous lists of presidential candidates to argue about years before the election. Not saying they're a bad thing, and no one, at least of all me, will ever again be able to laugh at anyone who includes seemingly preposterous candidates. Journalists should cover the invisible primary. This does conclude that article. And our last article in the dialogue section is submitted by Federico Bartels. Federico Bartels is a policy analyst specializing in defense budgeting at the Heritage Foundation's Center for National Defense. The article is titled, Congress Must Act on Military Bases. If you could remove 50 channels you never watch from your cable subscription and save $10 a month, you would do it, right? You have no use for extra channels, and they probably represent a time drain as you surf through the clutter to find Food Network. The Pentagon has a similar problem. According to a Defense Department study released last month, it now has 19% more infrastructure than it needs. Roughly one in every five installations the Pentagon owns is idle, yet we, the nation's taxpayers, still pay to secure and maintain those facilities. This excess capacity will not be filled in the future, not even under plans being considered to rebuild our shrunken military. It's time to cut it loose. Experience proves that the best way to shed excess military infrastructure is through a process called base realignment and closures, more commonly known by its acronym BRAC. That's capital B, capital R, capital A, capital C, BRAC. Congress can authorize the process to begin at any time, but for the last 7 years, it has denied the Pentagon's pleas to start a new round. When Defense Secretary James Mattis testified in Congress on the department's budget request, he told lawmakers a new round of BRAC likely would save $2 billion a year in maintenance costs. Previous rounds of BRAC already are producing more than $12 billion of savings every year. Additionally, Mattis noted, a new round of BRAC would help the department improve its readiness and lethality by better locating our forces and right-sizing the infrastructure and its associated costs. So why won't Congress act? Excuses range from pure parochial desire to protect bases in individual members' districts to claims that the Pentagon has provided insufficient data documenting the magnitude and costs of the excess. Moreover, a lot of members still have not gotten over some bad experiences with the last BRAC round in 2005. The 2005 round focused heavily on establishing joint bases, facilities that host units from two or more of the service branches. The goal of joint basing is to foster integration and interoperability among the branches. However, it led to much higher implementation costs than expected. But joint basing has been absent from all Pentagon proposals for a new round of BRAC and from all the congressional proposals since 2010. Congress has all the power in this discussion. It can further reduce the likelihood of cost overruns by limiting actions to those that save money in 5 years or by establishing specific goals, e.g., that the department needs to reduce 5% of its infrastructure. Unfortunately, lawmakers did none of that in the 2018 Defense Authorization Bill. Instead, they once again denied the Pentagon the authority to reduce idle infrastructure. It's a decision that forces the department and the American taxpayer to continue to dig deep into their pockets to pay for its upkeep. Congress can and should resolve all its reservations about BRAC in the next Defense Authorization Bill. All it will take is a willingness among both lawmakers and Pentagon brass to work together. The leaders of the Armed Services Committees understand the need for a new round of BRAC. All of them, both Democrats and Republicans, are committed to improving how the Pentagon runs. No one looks forward to calling the cable company. You know they are going to try to talk you out of changes. But if you knew that call would save you a lot of money and trouble every month, you'd make it. It is time for Congress and the Pentagon to pick up the phone and make that call. They are expected to be good stewards of tax dollars, and BRAC is a step in that direction. Delaying it will just represent another missed opportunity to save and grow stronger. I think that concludes the articles from the dialogue section. Okay, moving into the live section, we're going to read the article by Dr. Keith Roach. Good timing since it's flu shot time. His first letter is, Vaccine Mercury Does Not Build Up in the Body. Dear Dr. Roach, my friend refuses to get a flu shot because he says it has mercury in it, which builds up in the body. Is this true? That was submitted by M.A.S. And the answer, some flu vaccines do contain a preservative when they come in a multi-dose vial. This is to prevent contamination of the vaccine, something that can lead to serious infection. The preservative, thimerosal, has a small amount of ethyl mercury, which the body is, in fact, able to get rid of and which does not build up in the body the way methyl mercury can. That's the kind that is consumed in some fish, such as tuna. Neither of these is elemental mercury, the kind in a thermometer, which can be dangerous when its fumes are inhaled. The chemistry is important to understand. For example, cobalt metal can cause nerve and heart damage, but cyanocobalamin is an essential cobalt-containing vitamin, commonly known as B12. There is no reason to be concerned about the tiny dose of thimerosal in a vaccine, but people can get a thimerosal-free single-dose vaccine as a pre-filled syringe or vial. Next, Dr. Roach's question about a Bartholin cyst. This letter is submitted by M. L. R. Dear Dr. Roach, I am 60 years old and for years have had trouble with a Bartholin cyst on one side. It is sore in that gland again after taking turmeric for 2 months. It would bother me whenever I took hormone replacement a few years ago. Is it normal to still have trouble at this age? It doesn't get big anymore, just sore sometimes. Dr. Roach's answer. The Bartholin glands are small structures located in a woman's vulva. They secrete fluid that acts as a lubricant during sexual activity. The most common problems with Bartholin glands are cysts and abscesses. If these are symptomatic, they usually are treated with drainage performed by a woman's health specialist, usually in the office. Bartholin glands normally get smaller after menopause. I could not find any reports of, nor any reason why, turmeric might make Bartholin cyst abscess more likely. Turmeric can act as an anti-inflammatory and appears to have some anti-estrogen activity, so I wouldn't expect it to cause problems. That completes Dr. Roach's question and answers for today. And next, we're going to move into Mary Hunt's column, which is titled Everyday Cheapskate. And her articles are Tips on Tackling Tough Cleaning Jobs. And begins, Handy Scraper. In response to a recent post about finding something to use as a scraper when cleaning oven crud, we use a Lil Chiseler vinyl label scraping tool. $4 for a 2-pack. We use this all over the house to scrape paint and oven doors, to lift labels, decals, and stickers, and to remove just about everything you can imagine. It does all of that without scratching. It's amazing. And that was submitted by Kaki, K-A-K-I. And that Lil Chiseler is spelled L-I-L apostrophe Chiseler, C-H-I-Z-L-E-R, vinyl label scraping tool. Okay, next is Recycle Home Chef Ice Packs. I posted my Home Chef freezer packs on freecycle.org. Quite a number of people wanted them. One hunter took 2 full boxes. Submitted by Barb. Next is Reship It. In response to what to do with the Home Chef package material, we have a going postal shipping store that is happy to reuse all the packing material for their clients' shipments. Submitted by Dawn. Next is No More Stains. I fill my hubby's thermos with boiling water, drop a denture tablet inside, and let it sit overnight. I scrub with a bottle brush in the morning, and all the disgusting built-up coffee stains come right out. Submitted by Joni. Next is Dawn Rescue, D-A-W-N, Dawn Rescue. I have a way of removing stains, especially grease, from washable fabric that I never hear anyone suggest. I put Blue Dawn dishwashing liquid on the stains and let them sit for a minute, and the stain comes out completely 99% of the time. A friend even used it on a pair of her husband's jeans that were still stained after having been washed several times. All the stains came out. Blue Dawn is easy to get at any grocery, drug, or hardware store and is submitted by Rita. That does conclude our reading for Part 2 of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, November 28th, 2017. This has been Linda doing the reading, and I hope that you will return to listen to us again tomorrow and that you have enjoyed the readings from today.